Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today's show is a recipe for confusion. We'll be talking about Twin Peaks. That's the old TV series, not the band, though the band Twin Peaks will be in later this week. And we'll be hearing from The Streets of Laredo. That's the band, not the old cowboy song or the 1990s novel. Though, who knows, both may come up in conversation when the band joins us later. But just to make sure that confusion reigns supreme, let me start by saying that Soundcheck is not my show. It's never been my show. It's ours, by which I mean it belongs to you and me and to the people who work so hard to produce it. And for the past 8 years, that group has included Joel Meyer, who today is bidding us farewell. Now, to whatever extent this is my show, it's because Joel, as our executive producer, did such a great job overseeing things that I could just come waltzing in here and do my little radio host gig. So it only seemed fair that on his last day here at Soundcheck, we should give Joel a chance to shuck off all that executive producer stuff and have some fun on the air. And fortunately, a topic came up that was perfect for the occasion. So here, with his last hurrah on Soundcheck, is Joel Meyer.
Today is my last day working at WNYC. I've worked here for about 8 years, and more or less I've worked in radio since the mid-90s when I was a college radio staffer. Next week, I'll start a new job at Slate.com, producing podcasts, which is a lot like radio, but not quite. And before I head out the door, I want to say this. I have loved working at radio stations, especially WNYC. Radio stations are special places filled with some of the most unusual, interesting, creative, deep-voiced people you will ever meet. There's a TV show that probably made me want to work at a radio station in the first place, WKRP in Cincinnati.
I'm living on the air in Cincinnati, Cincinnati WKRP.
It ran from 1978 to 1982 in a bumpy first run on CBS. Then it went into syndication, and that's when I saw it as a kid in the 1980s.
Fellow babies, and now it's time to go to our live remote man on the scene at the Pinedale Shopping Mall for the big WKRP turkey giveaway. So take it away, Les Nessman.
This is Les Nessman, your man on the scene.
My family was the kind that ate dinner in front of the TV, and we watched two things, NBC Nightly News and WKRP in Cincinnati.
What a sight, ladies and gentlemen, what a sight. The copter seems to be circling the parking area now. I guess it's looking for a place to land. No, something just came out of the back of the helicopter. It's a dark object. Perhaps a skydiver.
Now, in case you never saw it, WKRP is a sitcom that revolves around a cast of oddballs who work at a struggling top 40 rock station in, you guessed it, Cincinnati.
Skydivers. I can't tell just yet what they are, but...
Oh, my God, they're talking! Oh, Johnny, can you get this? Oh, they're crashing to the earth right in front of my eyes!
There's DJ Johnny Fever, the morning show host, Andy Travis, the program director, Jennifer, the receptionist, Bailey, the young upstart, and many others.
Thanks for that on-the-spot report, Les. Just tuned in, the Pinedale Shopping Mall has just been bombed with live turkeys. Film at 11.
Hugh Wilson created the show and served as its executive producer. The show is being issued on DVD, the full series, with most of the music that was heard in its first run. It comes out on October 28th, and I'm pleased to say Hugh Wilson joins me by phone from Charlottesville, Virginia. Welcome, Hugh.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good. Thanks for sitting through that long preamble there.
I thought it was interesting, and this quite a day for you.
It is quite a day, and I'm so glad that you can be here. And it's this weird bookend, Hugh. Early in my time here on Soundcheck, one of my first days on the job, we booked you on the show to talk about the DVD set of the first season of WKRP that came out in 2007. And the show, you know, was live on the air. You and I had talked a little bit earlier in the day. We did a quick pre-interview, which is what producers do with guests before they come on the show. And then when it came time to bring you on the air at 2 o'clock, you wouldn't answer your phone. And we were like, what's going on? Where's Hugh Wilson from WKRP? What happened? And then we only found out later, once power was restored to your house, that a backhoe had taken out some kind of like power main or something like that to your house, and which killed your phone. So I am proud to say that on my last day here at WNYC, we have been able to bring you back on the show. So welcome.
Well, I'm sorry about that first problem. and today, no backhoe. I don't live on a farm anymore. I'm about three blocks away from the University of Virginia, and I try not to repair anything myself. I just take it easy. I'm so pleased, though, that this new set is coming out and that it's been fixed.
The big deal about this issue of the entire series on DVD is not only that it is the entire series, but most of the music that was heard on the show has been restored. The show was about a top 40 rock radio station, and yeah, there was a lot of music that was integral to the plots of episodes, to the punchlines of jokes. Music was a really big part of the show, and it was current music of the day.
That's right. When we did the pilot, there was a big time debate over whether we were going to use sound alike. Have you ever heard that term? Sound alike, like we'll have songs that sound like the Beatles.
But it's not quite the Beatles.
My feeling was that we'd be best off not doing the show altogether if we were going to use fake music. So I got my way. I got the music, and we used it, and then years later, when it came time to relicense it, it was all had increased 20 times in the price. And 20th Century Fox, who by then owned the rights to the show, didn't want to pay it. So they put out a DVD of the show with the music literally cut out, and I think it was a disaster for them.
There's, for example, in that that first issue of that first season, one of the most memorable scenes from the entire series is Les Nessman, the hapless news director of the station. Dons a wig because has a little male pattern baldness going on. Mm-hmm. He dons a wig to the sound of Hot Blooded by Foreigner. It's a great moment on the show, but I believe in that 2000 set, that was subtracted and replaced with that sound-alike music that you're talking about. Just the way that you move it. You know
you got lots of style. Oh, my God. Well, listen, I started to look at those shows, and I looked at half of one and stopped. So
really?
I never saw what you're talking about. I can't believe that hot-blooded scene could possibly mean anything to anybody without the music. I can't get you out of my
mind. That was The Coasters in a classic vein with Youngblood. We'll be pumping it right on through to Heart of Glass from Blondie in just a moment. But first, dig these very important words.
I'm talking with Hugh Wilson. He is the creator and executive producer of the radio station sitcom WKRP in Cincinnati, which ran from 1978 to 1982 on CBS and then for many years in syndication. All four seasons of the series are featured in a new DVD boxed set, which includes most of the music from the original show. It comes out on October 28th. So you worked in advertising, which gave you a sneak peek at the world of radio. For, you know, as someone who has worked in radio, you nail it on the head repeatedly on that show, what life is like working in a radio station. Where did that expertise come from if you hadn't worked directly in radio?
Well, that was from what was at the time WQXI in Atlanta. And Clark Brown was one of my best friends, and he's the guy I fashioned Herb Tarlick on.
Herb Tarlick, the sort of slightly oily, sleazy sales manager of the station.
That's right, who I adored. He was my favorite character.
There's a moment when I was watching some of the episodes in this that are on this new set that really rang true for me. Soundcheck is a daily show about music. We have bands play in the studio, and then we also talk with musicians and critics. And so if we have bands in the studio every day, we do an interview with them, and it means that we do about 200 of these every year, and not every single interview goes perfectly, Hugh. I'm going to tell you that. And I was rewatching the episode that features the fictional band Scum of the Earth, which is actually, I believe, a real band called Detective. And this is Venus Flytrap, the evening DJ, attempting to interview a very difficult band.
Where did you three first meet?
Where did we meet? How boring. Same old questions wherever we go.
Yes, but this is particularly boring.
No one should have to hear this nonsense. I would suggest that everyone listening turn to another radio station immediately.
That's a moment from WKRP in Cincinnati. Venus Flytrap, played by Tim Reed, interviewing the fictional band Scum of the Earth. I'm talking with Hugh Wilson, the creator and executive producer of the show. Hugh, is it true that some of the stars of the show were actually picking the music that TV audiences heard on the show?
Yeah. Howard Hessman, who Johnny Fever, he owned a lot of vinyl. He really knew music, so he said he'd like to pick his own music, and I said, sure. Howard loved old-time rock and roll.
And I feel feverish, and I am the doctor. And I know all you babies, you sitting at home, and you saying to yourselves, tell me, doctor, when you feel like this, what do you take? Well, I tell you, just take those old records on.
And then the evening guy, Venus Flytrap, that was Tim Reed. And Tim knew more about the kind of music that he liked than I did. And so he picked his music. And, I remember going down there one day and hearing the Commodores for the first time.
So, my children, say goodbye to the left side of your brain, which tells you the rules, and say hello to the right side of your brain, which just tells you to lie back and float in it.
He was running a nighttime kind of romance show, so
yes.
He had a lot of very smooth stuff.
His character, Venus Flytrap, was good at setting the tone both on the air and in the studio with various candles and a gong.
Yeah.
Hugh, I want to ask you about one other song that plays an important role on the show, and that is the theme song to WKRP. That song, you wrote the lyrics to that song.
I did, and my dear friend Tommy Wells, who has passed away, was a songwriter in Atlanta, and he owned the studio there, and Tommy fixed my lyrics up.
You got an able assist from Tommy.
Bless his heart. A guy who created Rhoda, he told me, he said, hey, Hugh, you should write the lyrics. I said, I can't write lyrics. He said, no, you really should. He said, you get a check every time they play it.
Uh-huh.
And so I did. I wrote him on an airplane with my wife. That's the last song I've ever written.
Got kind of tired of packing and unpacking, town to town, up and down the top.
once in a while. I'm at WKRP in Cincinnati.
I want to tell you one thing about the theme song. I'm really bad at remembering lyrics, even for somebody that produces a show that's about music. I'm very bad at remembering lyrics, but I can remember all the lyrics to your song, and that has come in handy with the birth of my first child about 4 months ago. It means that his nighttime lullaby is the WKRP theme song.
That's wonderful. I am delighted to hear that, and congratulations, by the way. I've got five kids, and they're all, of course, gone now. Mm-hmm. But I'm so happy for you to have your first.
Well, I'm interested to see what he thinks of the theme song and the TV show as he grows up. It's been very important to me, and I hope it's important to him as well too. Hugh, I wanted to say thanks so much for coming on the show. Like I said at the beginning of the conversation, you were nearly a part of one of my first days of work here at WNYC, and you are a part of the last day of my time here at WNYC, and I wanted to make sure I spent it with somebody that made a great piece of culture about what life is like working at a radio station.
Oh, thank you so much, and good luck to you.
Hugh Wilson is the creator and executive producer of the radio station sitcom WKRP in Cincinnati. You can catch the entire series as it's reissued in a new DVD box set that comes out on October 28th. For Soundcheck, I'm Joel Meyer.
That's Soundcheck's executive producer, Joel Meyer, who finishes out 8 great years of work here on the show today. Up next, another beloved TV series, Twin Peaks, is making a return to TV after 25 years. We'll talk about the music from the original David Lynch, Mark Frost production with Grantland writer Andy Greenwald. And later on the show, a visit from the Brooklyn band Streets of Laredo, whose roots lie all the way across the globe in New Zealand. Stay with us. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. For fans of a certain short-lived 90s TV program, this theme music probably brings to mind images of a solitary bird, a smoke-belching factory set in the mountains, waterfalls, and of course, the sign welcoming you to Twin Peaks, population 51,201. Twin Peaks only ran for 2 seasons on ABC back in 1990 and 91, but ever since its demise, passionate fans have been clamoring for its return, and now those wishes are coming true. 25 years later, Twin Peaks will return to television in 2016. Andy Greenwald of Grantland is one of those fans of the original series and joins me now on Soundcheck. Hey, Andy.
Hi, John.
So why are people freaking out 2 years in advance?
Well, this is a pretty big deal. As you alluded to, Twin Peaks was sort of the text for obsessive fandom of this TV generation. It was by far the most visually creative, most strange, most bizarre, most musically interesting program of its time, and it ended very unsatisfactorily for people. So I think, unlike many other shows that have been rebooted in the short term for cash grabs, this is something that people are pretty invested in and excited about.
For people who aren't familiar, it was a David Lynch.
Twin Peaks was a show that was created by the filmmaker David Lynch, not someone you would have ever expected to see walk through the door of ABC TV, especially when he did in the early 90s. And it was, in typical Lynch fashion, it was a sort of a celebration of a certain kind of Americana, but also a deep dissection of the dark underbelly lying beneath it.
Right,
Twin
right.
Peaks was the classic American town with incredible coffee, great cherry pie. Laura Palmer was the beautiful blonde prom queen, but of course in the first episode she turns up dead, wrapped in plastic. An FBI agent shows up, and pretty soon they're dancing dwarves.
And all manner of hell breaks loose.
Yes.
in very David Lynchian fashion. Mark Frost was also involved.
Yes, I gave him short shrift in that. The show was created by David Lynch, who certainly supplied the totally inimitable vibe.
The noir quality.
And the visual aspects of it. Mark Frost was his co-creator and co-writer, and he brought some of the more television aspects to bear.
So you mentioned that Twin Peaks was a really interesting TV show musically. Why?
I think that even in, as we come to the tail end of what some people have called the golden age of television in the last 10 years, original soundtracks, original scores have really not been a priority. You know, TV is there's a lot of rapid turnover, a lot of demand, and people have been putting their rather limited budgets in different directions. There's certainly a lot of TV shows that have incredible songs placed in them.
Right.
Everything from The Sopranos to every episode of Mad Men ends with the most perfectly curated song of the era. But in terms of original, rich scores that really add to the experience and deepen the experience, very few shows have approached the level that Twin Peaks achieved with the score by Angelo Badalamenti.
So Angelo Badalamenti and the singer, Julie Cruz,
yes,
create this kind of sound world for the town of Twin Peaks.
Yes. If you hear the opening themes and it's this swelling, almost beautiful, hypnotic, dreamlike instrumental, and yet the more the music seems to sort of reach and quest for impossible beauty, there's a darkness begins to emerge underneath it. It's a perfect marriage of sound and visuals.
The theme song for Twin Peaks is the instrumental version of the song Falling. The original version appears on the singer Julie Cruz's 1989 album called Floating Into the Night.
Yes.
Angelo Badalamenti, vocals by Julie Cruz, an album that David Lynch helped produce called Floating Into the Night, and the song is Falling, which in its instrumental version would be the theme song for the TV series Twin Peaks. And the three of them, they had an interesting kind of working relationship. You know, Julie Cruz had been part of Blue Velvet, David Lynch's film.
Right.
And then David Lynch actually did a quote-unquote symphony at the Brooklyn Academy of Music at the height of Twin Peaks mania, where Julie Cruz was like floating literally across the stage, and it was just like really weird.
It was David Lynch, and this is, I believe, 15, 20 years before he even started producing his own music,
right.
Which is what he does now. I mean, I think listening to that song now and the sort of completely direct, heartbreaking beauty and sadness of it really reminds me how much David Lynch... I feel like David Lynch doesn't get enough credit for the fact that despite his celebration of kitsch, you know, and there's elements of that music that is it's certainly earnest.
Yeah.
He's never ironic. He's celebrating a certain kind of old-fashioned Americana and romance and beauty, and despite the Formica countertops at the Double R Diner, he loves those things deeply. He's just not afraid to look beneath them.
Right. And you know, the dong dong, the little surf guitar. I mean, that's like Dick Dale's evil twin.
Yeah, exactly.
Playing the guitar there.
You know, and remember, we were just talking about it, that when it was time for David Lynch to make the Twin Peaks movie, he cast Chris Isaac as an FBI agent and David Bowie as a time-traveling FBI agent. So
of
the
course.
Music influences persist.
So, there's a major English composer named Gavin Bryars who was a huge fan of this TV show and its music. So, you know, the sound of Twin Peaks has resonated over the last 20 years.
I think absolutely. I think just people, all people really need to hear are that bass note, and people are immediately transported to a very strange, very unsettling world and place. I think that it reminds you how huge a part of television storytelling music can be, but actually hasn't been in the last 10 to 15 years.
So what do you think is going to happen in 2016 when diehard Twin Peaks fans finally, after a quarter century, get their wish and the show comes back? Do you think they'll
use the same music?
I'm convinced that they will. I think that the most important thing to remember is that after 25 years, I think old grudges have been forgotten. I think high expectations, weirdly, have been minimized. Enough time has passed that the response to this news, unlike the recent resurrections of, you know, beloved shows like an Arrested Development, things like that.
Right.
This has just been purely been happiness. No real doubt, no real fear. And one of the reasons for that is that unlike the original TV series, this will be a limited series, 9 episodes, all of which will be directed by David Lynch, written by Lynch and Mark Frost. And I believe with many of the cast members, either many of them passed away, many of them have aged out of the type of roles that we're used to seeing them in, the music will be one of the most important ways to maintain continuity between the original series and the new version.
And you know, that music, I mean, Julie Cruz is still out there singing, and Angela Badalamenti has continued to do unusual projects over the years.
Absolutely.
So one can hope that the triumvirate will reunite for this new series.
Yes, and of course, one of the other things that marked the original series was the use of classic American songs in very disconcerting and surprising ways. And the American Songbook has not gotten smaller in the intervening years. So.
Right. Well, now I want to get to a kind of a quirky example of that. In this clip from episode 1 of Twin Peaks, this is late in season 1 of Twin Peaks, Leland, who is Laura Palmer's father, has had like an episode, and he has killed one of the suspects in his daughter's death.
That's right.
And his hair has suddenly turned white overnight, and as he appears in the room with his wife and one of her friends, he is pulling from the Great American Songbook, and maybe not one of the greater songs in the songbook.
No, but one of the more memorable songs, I would say.
This is from David Lynch's TV series, Twin Peaks.
Leland.
Oh, Mersey, Dotson, Dozy, Dotson, little lambsy, divey, a kiddly divey too, wouldn't you? A kiddly divey too, wouldn't you? A kiddly divey too, wouldn't you?
Morning, dears.
Oh, Mersey, Dotson, Dozy, Dotson, little lambsy, divey.
Oh, Leland. Uncle Leland's hair turned white. Leland, come back here.
Yeah, Leland's lost it big time.
The pause is just as important as the singing, the ticking clock.
The pause and the ticking clock, exactly. The sound design.
Yeah.
Apart from the actual music, the sound design on this show was extraordinary.
It is, and Ray Wise was so good in the part as Leland Palmer, and here's a man who's completely unhinged in ways that we haven't even begun to realize, not just from grief, but from much more. And the way it's being channeled is in complete denial and singing this, basically this nonsense song that many people in the audience may have recognized, somewhere in the back of their memory. And it's taking something familiar and totally benign and transforming it into something disturbing and malevolent, and yet weirdly chipper.
We're speaking with Andy Greenwald, staff writer for Grantland, about the TV program Twin Peaks, created by David Lynch and Mark Frost. It is returning on Showtime in 2016, 25 years after the series wrapped up. It didn't wrap up. It just ended.
It ended in the most brutal way possible with a cliffhanger that I still haven't gotten over.
So, and there's a new Blu-ray box set called Twin Peaks, The Entire Mystery, which is out now. And talking about the music and the soundtrack and the way the music was more than just a soundtrack, there's the Laura Palmer theme, mm-hmm. you know, which recurs throughout the show in various times, different ways, different forms. But we first hear it in episode 1, right at the beginning, and it kind of sets a mood and then drags you kicking and screaming into a very different mood. Let's listen to this. They've just discovered the body of Laura Palmer washed up on the beach, but her mom, back home, doesn't know that she's missing yet.
Laura! Laura! Laura, now means now. Laura? Laura!
from episode one of the TV show Twin Peaks back in 1990. And as soon as that music changes, so does the whole mood of that scene.
Oh, it's devastating. You know, I'll say this. In the 25 years since Twin Peaks debuted, there has certainly been no shortage of dead bodies on television and death. It's one of the ways the TV shows stand out and get noticed. But very few of them take the time to allow the presence of the person who's been killed to haunt the series in the same way that Twin Peaks did. And the way that Twin Peaks did that, considering that Laura Palmer was dead from the minute the show began, is through that haunting theme.
Right.
It resonated throughout the series. It reminded people of the loss in the community and the horrific acts that had been perpetrated in a way that dialogue never would have been able to equal.
It was sort of an analog to the photos of Laura Palmer that you would see.
Absolutely. And it's a beautiful piece of music that actually allows the character to be complicated, because the whole point of the series is that she wasn't just a beautiful prom queen. She had a very dark side as well, as does that piece of music.
The soundtrack went gangbusters. I mean, it won a Grammy. You know, this was music that was really well received.
Yeah,
beyond the show,
the artist Moby sampled that theme song and turned it into a global smash on the dance floor as well. It was a very, very big deal.
We talked a little before that you feel pretty confident that Angelo Badalamenti will be back, you know, to work with David Lynch.
I would be very surprised if he was not involved in some way.
And so do you think that the music will sort of continue to maintain the kind of themes that we've come to expect? Do you think that maybe they're going to, after 25 years, try something different?
My sense is that just looking at David Lynch's career in the 25 years since, music has never gotten any less important to him. As we alluded to before, instead of making movies the last few years, he's actually been making music himself.
Right.
So his ears are as young as anyone's, and he's listening to many new things, and I'm sure there will be many new voices and influences involved in it. But in terms of the storytelling, music has always been an essential part of his films, and I can't imagine that being in any way different in 2016.
All right. So can you hold out till then?
I'm having a hard time. The more clips you play, the more antsy I'm getting.
Andy Greenwald of Grantland with us on Soundcheck. The TV program Twin Peaks returns after 25 years on Showtime in 2016. But you can get your fix in the new Blu-ray box set called Twin Peaks, The Entire Mystery, which is out now. Andy, nice talking to you again.
You too, John. Thanks.
As it turns out, we've got Twin Peaks on the brain here at Soundcheck, because this Friday, October 24th, the band Twin Peaks, a rock group out of Chicago whose members are way too young to have enjoyed the original TV show, will be joining us here in the Soundcheck studio. This is the lead-off track from their latest album called Wild Onion, and you can stream their visit here on Soundcheck Live just by going to our website, soundcheck.org, this Friday at 2 p.m. Eastern. Speaking of live music, up next we've got some coming your way from the band Streets of Laredo. Don't miss it next on Soundcheck.
Why don't you come home and talk to me anymore?
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Streets of Laredo. That's the band, not the novel or the old cowboy song. Streets of Laredo formed in New Zealand. But after just one hometown show, they packed up their gear and they headed to Brooklyn. Along the way, the brothers Dan and Dave Gibson and Dave's wife Sarah Jane added a few more musicians, expanded their bi-continental lineup, and now are a studio-packing seven-piece, all of whom are here in the Soundcheck studio with us today. And they're going to play a song for us called Slow Train. To get things started, here's Streets of Laredo live on Soundcheck. We'll be right back. The band is Streets of Laredo, live on soundcheck with their song called Slow Train. You heard Dan Gibson singing and playing guitar, Dave Gibson singing and playing drums, Sarah Jane Gibson singing and playing percussion, Cameron Dale on guitar, Andrew McGovern on keys, Sean McMahon playing bass, doing some backing vocals, and Tom Darlow on guitar and backing vocals. That's a big band. That's a big sound. Guys, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you so much, John. Thank you for having us.
So, Dave, the name of the band, Streets of Laredo, I mean, you guys are from New Zealand, but that is such an American name.
It is a very, it's not very New Zealand, that's for sure.
So was that part of the attraction, with the exotic, you know, the reference to Texas and cowboys and all that kind of stuff?
I think it is romantic to us. We like border towns. But probably most importantly, like, we really connected with the song Streets of Laredo. As you mentioned, Dan, the lead singer, is my younger brother. The song's nicknamed The Cowboy's Lament. It's about an old dying cowboy giving advice to a young up-and-coming cowboy. And I felt like the old dying cowboy, and my little brother Dan's the up-and-coming cowboy. So it kind of fitted.
Not to get too far into the weeds here, but you know the original, the dying cowboy is dying of syphilis in the original song.
Yeah. As am I.
Well, maybe someone can give him that.
Just to be authentic. How much do you care about your art?
The funny thing, though, is, you know, Dan, I don't know how deeply you guys got into the backstory of the whole name and everything, but, you know, Streets of Laredo, before it came to this country, came to us from England, where it was like an old, you know, it was just an old guy, an old sailor, I think, dying of syphilis.
Oh, sailor, man.
Yeah, yeah. So, sailor. In fact, you guys sort of bringing the song back across the Pacific, you know, that's the song cool has now circumnavigated the globe.
England came to us.
That was always our intention. We always were thinking that exact thing, John.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So now, the sound of the band Streets of Laredo, name aside, certainly, you know, there are echoes of American music, of what we're now calling Americana. Did you guys grow up with that?
Yeah, definitely. Like, me and Dave, like our parents, had a lot of, like, old kind of folk, like Christian kind of albums hanging around, like from Keith Green. You know,
no,
to like,
I don't know.
But yeah, there was like heaps of like, you know, like kind of Paul Simon albums and records and like, you know, Dylan and things like that. My parents were really into that.
Cat Stevens.
And then, yeah, Cat Stevens, old like.
Not so much Americana, but hey.
Yeah, yeah. Old like gospel records and stuff. So there was that. But also like, I'm the youngest in the family. I got a twin brother, Ben, as well. So I've got an older sister and then there's Dave. So growing up, you were kind of like, it was a lolly scramble in terms of music. You know, you got your older sister's music, and she was like a big grunge, like Silverchair, like Nirvana kind of fan. Mm-hmm. So, and then there was Dave's music, and there was my twin brother's music. So my kind of like, all my days off from school, I'd kind of just sneak into their rooms and kind of steal their tapes.
So if you have a twin, is Ben, is he still back in New Zealand?
Yeah, he's back in New Zealand. He's kind of like, he's like a big time surfer.
Okay.
Like kind of a dude.
So you're not identical to twins, at least not.
No, we're unidentical, but he looks a lot like my brother, actually.
You know, I mean, it's kind of appropriate to talk about how songs travel, how you guys travel, because there's a recurring theme in these songs of kind of being away from home, going to home, traveling, the nomadic life of a musician. And that seems to be at play in this next song, too. It's called Lonsdale Line. The band is Streets of Laredo. They're performing on Wednesday the 29th at the Mercury Lounge here in Manhattan, but are performing for us today here in the Soundcheck studio. This is from their new album called Volume 1 and 2.
That lead to you.
That's called Lonsdale Line, and you'll find it on the new album by the band Streets of Laredo, performing live here for us in the Soundcheck studio today. The album's called Volume 1 and 2. The seven members of Streets of Laredo performing for us today, and instrumentally it's pretty much As You Were on the first song, except that Andrew switched from keyboards to trumpet on that one. Dave and Dan, the brothers Gibson, leading the band Streets of Laredo. Dave, why the album title Volume 1 and 2? Were you trying to, like, I don't know.
Freak people out?
Yeah, I don't know. Okay. I mean, there's always the sophomore jinx thing where you just figure, hey, we'll do two records in one.
That's a good point. Yeah, these are two records. Well, basically, you know, we'd released independently in a very small fashion these two EPs earlier last year.
Okay.
And we had released them as two EPs just in Bushwick, basically, just to try to get attention and to get known. But we'd always recorded these songs as an album. We'd gone back to New Zealand and we'd recorded them in one session. And we called the two EPs Volume 1 and Volume 2. So it's kind of like we just put them together once we got a record deal and split them out as an album.
And now everyone is very confused.
And now everyone is very confused.
Volume 1 and 2 is out now from Streets of Laredo. And Dan, so now you guys are here, you know, living in Brooklyn.
Yep.
Is there a Kiwi community? I mean, do you know people like Liam Finn and some of the other New Zealand musicians who are based here now?
Yeah, for sure. There's a great little Kiwi contingency, and we reside in Bushwick pretty much.
We actually just recorded in Liam's studio for like 6 weeks while he's on tour.
Uh-huh.
All the Kiwis kind of look out for each other. So he happened to be on tour in the UK, and so we just used this studio to make a bunch of new demos, actually.
So is that what Bushwick is? Bushwick is becoming Little New Zealand? Are we going to start seeing, like, corner lamb stores and
meat pies, meat pie trucks?
I don't think there's quite enough of us yet.
Yeah.
I think there's about 50.
There's about 50 of us.
That's
so
not too bad. Yeah.
With the brand new immigrants.
So how has it been for you guys? Has it been culture shock coming from New Zealand to Brooklyn? Are you kind of finding a way?
Yeah, for sure. It's, you know, New Zealand, it's very slow pace and chilled out, which is cool. It's isolated. It's nice. But, you know, growing up in New Zealand, you're always looking over the Pacific and you're going, what's out there, you know? So it's good to travel. And I think Bushwick's been a really good transition for us, you know, especially for music. It's the mecca of creativity, pretty much. There's so many great bands coming out of Brooklyn and New York, and you know, really interesting sounds sonically.
And it was always going to be Brooklyn. Challenging. You didn't think of maybe going to Laredo or some other?
I think you got to have a little romantic notion about New York City. It's kind of like that, almost that false sense of security before you move over.
Yeah.
And then, I'd fallen in love with it over 2 weeks. I stayed in the Lower East Side, and I was like, let's just move here. And when we did move here, it was pretty difficult, actually, if I was to be honest, especially in the first 6 months. A lot of the songs that you've heard are really informed by that first six-month period.
Yeah. So that's what we were talking about before, the kind of the sense of rootlessness, home away from home.
Homelessness, just not knowing how to use the post office or order a bagel.
All the things that New Yorkers have to know how to do, especially ordering a bagel. The band is Streets of Laredo. Their album Volume 1 and 2 is out now. They're playing at the Mercury Lounge here in Manhattan on Wednesday night, October 29th, and playing for us here in the studio today. Guys, this has been a lot of fun having you here with us on the show today.
Thank you so much, John.
You got a song to play us out with?
We're going to go out with a song called Girlfriend. And it's about New York City and what a tough mistress she is. Bye.
one complaining. I'm scrubbing floors, now I'm the one complaining. Trying to make some money so I can see the lady. Statue of Liberty, what you gonna give to me? She's my girlfriend, yeah. She's my girlfriend. I'm on the sideline. She's in the moment, moment by moment. Some kind of delirium. Letters from the government. Robbing hearts and breaking banks. Breaking rules.
Tomorrow on the show, Sonic Youth co-founder Thurston Moore is back with his first solo record since 2010. It's called The Best Day, and we'll get to hear some of it live when he and his band join us in the Soundcheck studio. Plus, our upcoming Willy Wonka-themed concert with the band Primus, whose new album is inspired by the 1971 film Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, is sure to include a cover of the song Pure Imagination. Tomorrow, we'll talk with entertainment reporter Gary Burton about why that song in particular has become such a staple in the pop canon, and we'll hear some favorite and least favorite cover versions. And tomorrow, we'll do the show without our longtime executive producer, Joel Meyer. As Joel mentioned at the top of the show, today was his last day here before moving a few blocks up the road to Slate.com. So if the show starts to suck tomorrow, you know who to blame. Joel, thanks for everything. Good luck out there in the real world, or whatever world it is that Slate.com inhabits. For the rest of us, we'll be back tomorrow, and hope you will too. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.